Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had
Loan Rope Extraction Jackson after Mao and on the board. S&P futures were up today, at least so far. S&P futures are up 8, NASDAQ futures up 177. Yesterday we were the other way. S&P was down 43, NASDAQ was down 307. So we're up, down, seemingly, but generally more to the upside than down, but especially in the Dow. Dow stocks have all been up. We had big rallies yesterday in a lot of places that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Caterpillar, American Express, Goldman Sachs, a lot of stocks are up in the Dow. They shoved the Dow way up yesterday, up 328, even though the rest of the market was down fairly heavy. I mean, the NASDAQ was. So we'll see what today brings. We have Professor Kevin.
Yeah, good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm relaxed. I'm sitting on my ass. I'm doing nothing.
Well, you never guess what I saw this morning, Kevin.
Like in the intro.
Just when you think you've seen it all, I go to shut the front window, and what do I see racing along the sidewalk?
What did you see racing along? A tiger.
Close, a coyote.
Oh, really? A coyote on the north side.
Yeah, in the middle. I've seen them. Sometimes when we come in, you'll see a guy over on Kingsbury Street because it's right next to the river. There's a lot of places there they can hang, but. You know, I saw a few rats the last few weeks. I haven't seen a rat lately. I wonder if this boy's been around. we have a couple of, what do they call the cats that are just hang outside, the feral cats. But the first time I've seen a coyote, they're all over the place out by Audrey's. And, you know, they don't...
Yeah, I'm not surprised to find them in suburbia, even if, you know, even if it's a crowded area, they've, you know, more or less been... suburban sprawl has force them out of their habitats in many cases, but where you live, they should have been long gone.
Yeah, you would think, but this guy was away from the river, and there's not really a big park by me or anything. I don't know where the guy lives, but sure he's got a spot. He looked pretty sprite. Anyway,
before we get started, you know, I just want to follow up on something because it's come up enough times, and I finally decided to look into it.
Oh.
Because
when you do that, you know, all you do is frustrate yourself because you find stuff you didn't want to see.
Well, no, this is just a point of clarification because we've often said, you know, you guys were talking about gain of function research and bio labs and so on. And so it is, you know, Obama banned it, which he did. He 100%, you know, banned it. And then Trump came in and real early on in his first term, he said, we're going to do it. But it wasn't just, you know, screw what Obama did, we're undoing that. They actually went in and they built a framework to go with it. So it, you know, there were 8 evaluation criteria assigned to it. And as you go through it and as you read the stories about the bio labs and the people that were involved, they totally violated all of these. So there had to be a scientific soundness to the study. There was something called pandemic credibility, which meant it had to represent a realistic source of future natural pandemic, which was not the case. There had to be risk justification. In other words, the societal benefits would demonstrably outweigh the safety risks. There had to be no feasible alternative for doing the same kind of study. The labs, the facility, and the staff had to prove that they had the physical biosecurity infrastructure to handle the pathogen safely. That wasn't true. responsible communication. The resulting data must be safely shareable without providing blueprint for bioweapons. Federal oversight. The project had to accept continuous active federal monitoring throughout its life cycle. Not true. Ethical justification. It had to respect core bioethical values and so on. And then there was a review panel that was supposed to review all of this kind of stuff. So, you know, it's not... So it is absolutely true, and in Trump's second term, actually, he just went back to, you know, the total executive order halting federal funding for any kind of gain of function research. So it's off the table now, but it's not as simple as we like to make it sound sometimes when we say, well, he undid it.
Well, I don't think I ever.
Much so, and I think that's an important distinction because it really provides the right context.
Well, to me, it is, but it isn't. I mean, my theme through the whole thing is, and it's been a long time, Kevin, and good ones and bad ones, going back to friggin' Roosevelt. What exactly are these executive orders? I don't think anybody paid attention to Obama. And like you said, and when Trump went the other way, he probably did it in the right way. Nobody paid attention to him either.
This is probably an appropriate place for an executive order because administration of the various CC and I can't remember the name of the agency that Fauci ran. The administration of that is left to the executive branch, and the executive branch can put limitations on what they do. So, in this particular case, I do think it's an appropriate.
I'm not going to say it's not appropriate. What I'm going to say is, I don't know what it even means. If you find some guy from the Ukraine or wow, whoever, somebody sending money to what was the name of the place in China? I always forget the damn name. The province, you send some guys to, and you go arrest them. How do you arrest them? What's the crime? I mean, how do you bring them to court? Where does it say somewhere in the criminal code? That's my concern. I'm not saying they did anything wrong. I'm just saying. So what happens to the guy? You bring him in, and the judge goes, "Show me the statute." It's not a statute. There's nothing that goes with it.
Yeah, so it depends. It might or might not be in the statute, and I don't know the answer. And so you've given me my next little research project to do, because there could be circumstances where the law says how it's governed and who sets the rules and what the penalties are for violating them, without being specific about the rules. That's entirely possible. I don't think that could possibly apply to every executive order, as we've seen. But in fact, we've actually seen executive orders that are in violation of the law. DACA, for instance, is one that is totally in violation of what the law says. But that's where we stand. So I'll look into the executive.
Well, I think we both know that. If the Department of Justice doesn't like you, they'll find you. They'll get you for conspiracy to get on the plane wrong or something from going to Ukraine. there's no doubt they can find something if they want to. But I'm saying
we've seen a little of that, haven't we?
Oh yeah. Well, I have this curiosity, and I've asked all the legal guys we have on the show, and I asked my friends in the hood that are. I mean, nobody seems to know, Kevin. I mean, what if you dig up an Eisenhower executive order and you walk up to a guy and say, "Hey, this thing's still alive. By the way, you're screwing with it." What does that even mean? When Eisenhower dies, do they die? Nobody can even give me those answers.
I mean, I'll go back to what I just said, though. I do suspect, and this is just what I expect to find, which is totally a hypothesis and might not be true, but. I expect that I'm going to find that there. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on what authority was granted by statute to the executive branch, and therefore, what the consequences could be for not following executive orders.
Well,
Whereas anything that's an executive order that is totally outside of what anything the legislation says is not going to have any teeth in terms of legal enforcement.
Well, I mean, in this particular case, I mean, it seems like somebody somewhere or somebody's at the University of North Carolina either moved this stuff through.
In North Carolina, the EcoHealth Alliance was a not-for-profit.
Okay, but the university had their name on it somehow. Because somehow it filtered through. And I don't know the specifics, but I'm saying I know you can mess with the University of North Carolina if you want to, because obviously Trump is doing that, and other people have done it too. I mean, you can go audit them. You can do all kinds of crap if you want to mess with them, right? But it's still, if there's 10 executive orders, I guess I don't care, Kevin, if they all make sense. But if there's 1,000 of them, I kind of like to know what they are. I'm just saying, if that's the way we legislate now, I'd sort of have a little bit better definition, whoever's president. I mean, I don't know what happened to the Roosevelt ones. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but EcoHealth Alliance was not part of the University of North Carolina. It was a standalone NGO run by one of Fauci's buddies. And so that's where the money got steered, and they're the ones that that got involved with the Wuhan virology.
Who were the foreign guys? Were they Sweden? Were they Britain? Where did they come from?
Which foreign guys?
There were foreign guys that shipped money there too. Did they flow through this Carolina thing as well, or did they go right to Wuhan?
Again, I can't tell you the answer to that off the top of my head. My guess is that everything gets funneled through some of these non-government entities. Otherwise, you would be duplicating. So, you know, if you want to fund research, and EHA is the one that's in the process of doing this, then that's probably where the funding is going to go. And in fact, my guess is they go knocking on doors asking for funding from all kinds of governments.
Well, if you listen to Wayne talk about all the different places like that the CIA has around, it's pretty scary there too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, our buddy Jimmy, who's
he's your buddy. I don't like the guy.
Oh, sometimes, you know. Let's just say he's convinced that the NFL is going to have to back off. Well, I should start the story at the beginning. The quarterback we're talking about, the Texas Tech guy, the gambling guy, that got the injunction to only be two-game suspension because he's in gambling rehab and it's now a disease, sort of like alcohol.
Yeah, and his attorneys proposed the 2-game suspension as a remedy for it. So that, you know, because they aren't playing anybody significant. So,
well, according to our buddy Jimmy, he is now registered for the supplemental draft, the NFL. And my question was, who the hell is going to draft him? And of course, Jimmy will argue about anything. Says, well, what do you mean? He's in the rehab. I don't know. I don't think the NFL is going to go with that, do you? Or how does that work?
I would be surprised if an NFL team were to touch him. Now, I know there's people who will absolutely believe that they will overlook everything if he's talented enough, and that may be true. I mean, we saw, you know, Ray Lewis as an example, you know, gained hero status somewhere along the way. I've never quite understood how that happened. But that was after being involved in a murder cover-up. The NFL will make me scratch my head often enough, but I would be pretty darn surprised if they touch it. Gambling is sort of their hot button thing, even though they are totally, from a sponsorship standpoint, they're totally on board with gambling, but from the standpoint of their players' involvement, they're not. And they have to be that way. I mean, they really have to be that way because, you know, if you undermine the credibility of the game, the intentions of the people involved, if you undermine that... If you
undermine it any more than it's already undermined.
then you ruin your product. So they can't do that.
All right, so how does that pile in with a judicial or a governmental thing that says, you know, drugs like alcoholism is now like gambling... It's a disease, and by the way, if you're in rehab, you're okay. How does the NFL fight that, if that's really where the courts want to go?
Well, I think the NFL's fight is to say, it's up to the teams if they want to draft them or not, and nobody wants to draft them.
Well, that you know, that doesn't work. You know,
they collude in such a way that they won't draft him. Yeah, I'm sure they could.
I think that's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
It is. So you don't, unless you cover your tracks really well.
I guess what I'm saying is the rule strong enough? I mean, could Pete Rose have said I'm in rehab, put me in a Hall of Fame? I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, crazier things have happened. We're not close, but I happen to be a huge fan of Lou Boudreau, and I know the guy spent a lot of his life, I'm not going to say wishing he never had a daughter, but wishing the daughter never met Denny McClain. How many times was that guy in rehab, and Lou had to bail him out every time?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then there's Art Schleister. I mean, how many times was he supposedly off the gambling and back right on? I mean,
yeah, but the NFL didn't tolerate him very long.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm always looking at kind of is there a principle, Kevin? Usually, it's kind of an odd job trying to find some principle. But it's,
well, the principles can be it's going to be driven by, by the business considerations. And like I said, if you undermine, if the league feels like, you know, that a gambler is going to in any way, gambling in general does this, but in the specific, if gambling is the thing that that will make people not trust that the outcome is pure, I hate to use the word pure about anything with pro sports, but you know, if there's any doubt that players don't go out on the field trying to play their best and trying to win the game, if there is any doubt that the officials in the game don't go out there and call them as they see them, even if they kind of suck at calling them as they see them, then if there's any doubt like that, then they have totally undermined their product. And they can't do that. They can't do that and expect to thrive. So
I'd say the NBA's done that for 40 years, and they thrive.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, people suspect. You know, with the NBA, there's a lot of theories that come out around that. But wasn't the big theory this time that we want Wembanyama to win? And of course, that didn't happen.
You know what? I wonder if they didn't switch that and say we don't want that last game in New York. It's too dangerous.
Could be.
But here's my
Brunson, as I said, he's a Chicago area guy, pride of Stevenson High School, and he was a national champion at Villanova. They have three guys in the starting lineup on the Knicks that were teammates for the at Villanova and won a national championship together.
Well, here's what I is
which is kind of interesting in a way, you know, way to go ahead and build your team, just get people who already know each other and play well together.
Well, it
and
seems
succeeded together.
Well, it seems, Kevin, like we're on this, or I'm on this kick. I don't know if I should be or not, about where the power really lies. And when I look at what's happening, it's a good thing that I don't have to beat up on people in this current administration or the last one or the one before that. When I talk about stock market movement and money supply and who's really running the economy, when I can just use Japan as an absolute example of what I'm talking about. And I don't think anybody really cares that it's not like I enter a political argument where the Japanese president, whoever the hell he is, and who he ran against, and how the other guy'd be better or a lady or whatever. It just happened, Kevin. So my question on this quarterback is: we've got the NFL who thinks they're God, okay, and in a lot of ways people think they're God, and then you've got the NCAA, which thinks they're God as well, or getting there. They're a demigod at this point. Well, the judge slaps them back and says somehow or another, no, this is a rehabable sickness, mental illness. You can't take the guy's livelihood away from him.
No, it's not exactly what they said.
Or for the year, they can't. Okay, they can't.
They can't. They can't take it until his court case is heard, and the court case.
Well, it's more. But okay, but
nobody is using. No judge is using that argument. The judge is saying, we can't hear the court case until X, which is bullshit. They should be able to get that on some kind of track in the next few months and hear the case. But he's saying you're enjoined until we hear the case, because if the plaintiff were to prevail, then you wouldn't be able to undo the damage.
Okay, so
So you get a restraining order.
Which puts me right where the question I'm asking you is, there is a restraining order in place. Now, if the NFL says, we're not paying attention to that, or we'll just tell everybody not to draft them, is the NFL now think they're strong? I don't agree with this thing being a disease, as you can probably tell. I think the guy should be banned. But I'm saying, now, is the NFL automatically think, either by hook or by crook, by just telling people not to draft them, that somehow they're bigger than the judge's decision? I think they think they are. I mean, just saying.
No, they might wait and stall until the court case is actually concluded.
Well, but I mean, he wants to play this year. That was the whole problem with the NCAA thing. He's only got 1 year left.
By the way, let's introduce Mike.
Yeah,
Murphy is here because I keep looking at his name in the in Zoom and saying we got to get the soccer.
Oh, I didn't see him in there. I'm sorry. Sorry, Mike. I was hoping you'd pile in today because the soccer's picking up, and you're our expert, because I sure as hell am not.
Mike finish the thought on the
and then tell everybody who you are. You've been on for a while.
Okay, my name is Michael Murphy. I went to Notre Dame with both Kevin and Tom, and I'm the supposed expert on World Cup soccer.
Only because you are.
All right, let's talk soccer then.
He also lived in Germany for a long time and became a soccer fan much more than we are, so he's way above me when it comes to soccer. So there you go.
He knows stuff.
Yeah, he knows stuff.
All right, so with soccer, they're still in the first round. They haven't even completed the first round yet. Here are the groups. All right, and this will get, and I'm going to go with essentially the top two in each group, because this year there's 48 teams in the first round. Normally, in the old days, it used to be 32. So this year there's an extra round, and there's weaker teams in this first round because they expanded the field. So in Group A, one of the host teams, I think it'll be Mexico and the Czech Republic or Czechia. South Africa could sneak in there, as could South Korea. So that one's kind of up for grabs. Group B, they all tied in their first round games, and it's a relatively weak group. I think Switzerland may come out of it, and maybe Canada. Who knows? So Qatar had a surprise tie with Switzerland, so we'll see what happens there. The next round of games could determine some things. Group C is Brazil and Morocco. They will move on. I don't think Scotland's going to make it, although they did get 3 points. Group D is the U.S., Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey. On the 19th, so on Juneteenth, the U.S. plays Australia. That should be a very good game. I think we will win a close game, but you also have Turkey in this group, so I'm not sure how it's going to come out yet. And we have to play Turkey later on, so we'll see what happens. Group E is Germany, and then it's kind of up for grabs. Germany beat Curacao pretty heavily, and I think Ecuador and Ivory Coast tied. So that group,
Mike, two teams come out of a group, right?
Yes, Tom, and maybe three. It depends on how they do the seeding they'll throw in the top teams from some of the other groups to balance out the 32. So Group F, they played the other night. Netherlands will come out in that one, although Japan tied the Netherlands, and I'm pretty sure Sweden will come out on top. Group G is Belgium, Iran, New Zealand, and Egypt. I would say Belgium will come out of that group, and I'm not sure who else will, although New Zealand did beat Egypt. Group H, Spain, Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, and Cape Verde. Cape Verde tied Spain in a surprise. Their goalie played remarkably well. So I would say in that group it's going to be Spain and Uruguay. All right, yesterday France, Iraq, Norway, and Senegal all played, and I think it'll be France and Norway in that group. France did beat Senegal decisively, and Norway beat Iraq in what started out as a close game, but then Norway pulled away. And the guy to watch on France, just like last time, is Mbappe, Kylian Mbappe. He's very good. He scored 2 goals in their games. So we'll see what happens.
I watched it from that game. He's a big dude. What's he, 25, 30 pounds heavier than everybody? I mean, he's just a rock, that guy.
And he's fast, yeah, too. He's very, very quick.
It's like he's 200-some pounds, and he's as fast as the other guys.
Right. Well, and okay.
He's an Aaron Judge type.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Well, and he's the exception, really. He plays, you know, forward/striker very well, and they feed him well, too. So, but he's also a very good passer. So we'll see how that – France will get into the, I would say, the final eight. Okay, Group J. So the other finalist from last time is Argentina. They beat Algeria decisively, 3-0. Messi had a hat trick, and he looked very good. But the Argentinians, they play very well. They're very quick. They pass well. So they will also probably be in the final eight. And that the other two teams in that group are Austria and Jordan. I think that it'll be Argentina and Austria in the final two.
Mike, two questions. Even though they went to 48, is it sort of like the NCAA where there's still a couple teams that think they're better than half the teams in the 48, like Italy or somebody?
You know, speaking of which, Tom, Italy was not even good enough to make this 48.
That's what I mean.
That's a surprise to me. But there's just really weak teams compared to the fields from the previous World Cups, because of this 48. So you know, and I don't want to belittle the African teams, and there's Morocco's very good, and I think there might be one or two other teams might make the final 16. And then in Group K, they're playing today. That's Portugal, I think, is playing the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Uzbekistan's playing Colombia. The two teams that'll come out of that group are probably Portugal and Colombia. And then Group L is the final group, and England and Croatia are playing today. That'll be a good game. That'll be a very good game, actually. And then Ghana and Panama are playing. Out of that group will most likely be England and Croatia.
Now, these guys, you're rattling off all these countries, which that's how it is. Is like Qatar, are all those guys from Qatar? Or can they go, I mean, is it still kind of a, where Messi's from Argentina, that's what he plays for?
No, they are all citizens of the country that they're playing for. Now,
really? Okay.
Qatar bought a couple of players, I think. But for the most part, you know, they're citizens of their... Now, there's a guy on the U.S., this Falohan, I'm not sure how to... But his last name is Balogun. I think he holds 3 passports, and this time he chose to play with the U.S. because I don't think he had a chance of making the England team. And he played extremely well for the U.S. In their opening game. And he's going to have to play well when they play Australia, too.
Well, I watched two games a little bit. I watched Norway, and they look great to me. Right. I mean, but I also watched my brothers went to dance for dinner on Sunday, and, of course, his kids are all into soccer. And we're all watching this Ecuador played somebody and somebody. Mike, it was everything that anybody who is not a soccer guy thinks is wrong about soccer. Every time the ref turned his back, one of the guys at Ecuador gave somebody a cheap shot. The guy went down like he was dead. Everybody bitched at the ref for 10 minutes, and then finally the guy got up and ran like there was no problem, nothing wrong. You're watching this. Ecuador did end up losing, I think, 1-0, but it was like everything that people say is wrong about soccer.
Well, I mean, they're still doing dives, but now it's a penalty if you do a dive. So you've got to be very careful if you end up with a blatant, you know, collapse or a dive. You know, that's the soccer guys refer to that as diving.
Well, the one time I, you know, I don't know.
I refer to it as Duke.
Yeah.
Duke basketball.
Right. Well, that's what, I mean, it's kind of the same thing with a charge in basketball, you know. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, what's the penalty? One guy, I forget who the other team was. Well, Ecuador was in burnt orange.
I think they were playing Ivory Coast.
Yeah, and they were in black. So the Ecuador guy goes up and just nails the guy from the back, and down he goes. And they call up, you know, they didn't give him a yellow card. So I said to my nephew, you know, what's the penalty on that? He goes, well, you get the ball back. I said, so if you do it right, you can nail a guy, and he just gets the ball back when he had it in the first place.
Well, it's a free kick, and that's what he's talking about. You get the ball back, and sometimes with a free kick, you can set it up so that you get a good set play out of it. And there are teams that do that very well.
Well, this one was in the middle of the field, so it was not any big advantage. The guy just started dribbling it again.
Right.
But, these guys play like every week. Where do they all stay, and what do they do in the midweek? It's all practice and try and nurse injuries back to health?
Yeah, they all have, the U.S. team is in the West Coast group, and I think they play in L.A., San Francisco, and Seattle. And if you notice in this, they're not like the U.S. stadiums, they're calling MetLife Stadium New York, New Jersey Stadium. And what I think is that the MetLife didn't pay homage to the FIFA, so they don't get to use their stadium name. You know, Lumen Field in Seattle is just the Seattle Stadium, or Washington Stadium.
Really?
They might be calling. Oh, yeah, there's no... Arrowhead, I don't think they referred to Arrowhead. Well, maybe the American announcers might have, but it's just Kansas City Stadium. And I don't think they referred to Dallas as AT&T Stadium either. It's just Dallas. So,
now, what is Dallas doing to get grass in there?
Oh, it's just an indoor field. I don't think they have to have grass in there. Or maybe they brought the grass in.
They do. They bring in the sectionals, that's been around for a while. I remember Soldier Field has done that in the past for it. So they actually can bring in, large sections of grass, and they're raised up.
Yeah, and they get enough sun in there where I think they can keep it living for the tournament. But it'll probably be worn out toward the end. But who knows?
But it's, I think it's absolutely, it's fascinating. The logistics of 48 teams moving around is... Were they all, pile into a local college and stay there for the week? Or
I think that they have their designated training sites, and I'm sure that had something to do with the cities that they selected. So L.A. probably has numerous sites, and I think the U.S. team was training in a suburb of Los Angeles. I don't know where, the San Francisco area would have plenty of colleges. Seattle also... you got UW up there, so... And in Canada, they've played in Vancouver. They're going to play in Toronto. They're playing in Philly. They've had games in Boston. So they've done a good job. I think they could have had a few more games in the Midwest, but they had to accommodate both Canada and Mexico, because all three of those... Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. are the host team for this.
Is there a requirement how big the place has to be?
Probably, but I don't know the specifics on that, Tom. They're all in decent-sized stadiums, that's for sure.
Some of them are bigger than others, especially the Canadian, one of the ones in Canada, and one of the ones, I think Mexico, I can't remember now if Mexico City was huge, but there's another one in Mexico that it is not nearly as big. So there are some smaller ones. It's a matter of, what if they have a pro team, where are they playing?
Right.
And what kind of accommodations do they have? So I think it varies, but most of them are very large stadiums. Most of them are NFL size stadiums.
Mike, who it's going to be a big question. Essentially, who are these guys? There's all these club teams. There's these, a few guys, I guess, from the North American League are actually playing, which they never used to. But one of the guys is a keeper. And so, anyway, but I mean, you also got, a year ago, you would say that U.S. played Mexico. Okay, but U.S. has a team. Then there's an Olympic team. Then there's this team. Are they all totally different?
There's probably some crossover, but I would say the Olympic team is probably younger players from the developmental system of whether it's the U.S. or Germany or whatever. And Mexico, Tom, I think it's all kind of different teams. These guys are almost all pros that have been playing for a long time, both for their country and for their club, whatever club they belong to. So
we can assume that none of the guys on the U.S. Olympic team are on the current team.
I don't think you could make that assumption. There might be a few of the younger players that might be on the Olympic
team. How many out of the... There's 11 guys play, right? Am I even right on that? Or is it 10?
Yes, you're right on that. It's 11.
All right, so how many people are on the squad?
I think it's... They bumped it up to 26 because they're allowed to make... and this is another change. They're allowed to make 5 substitutions in the games. So, like, Norway, toward the end of their game yesterday, they subbed 4 people at a time. I don't know whether they used all 5 or not, but, you know, when they were winning decisively at the end, they probably slipped in their last substitution just to get the guy a cap for the World Cup. You know, that gets him, you know, one more cap for his country. And then, like, Messi has played, I think they said it yesterday, but he's played 200 professional games or international games, I think it is. And he and Ronaldo, who will play today, they're playing in their 6th World Cup. And that's the record, those two now. And I think there might be a third guy that's tied with them for the most FIFA or the most World Cup appearances in FIFA tournaments.
Yeah, well, how old were they in their first one? Like 17?
Yeah, that's about right. I don't know how old Messi was, but he's turning 40 in this tournament. I don't think Ronaldo is that old yet, but it's pretty close.
Well, that's 24 years. You got to be 16.
Right. Well, whatever. And well, that's what Ronaldo was and that's probably what Messi was when he started out, too.
Wow. Well, you were discovered early. What,
Mike, go ahead, Kevin. Question is, you know, for those of us who, you know, I this is a big event, and, you know, very much like me watching the Masters. You know, I'm not someone who watches a lot of professional golf. I know who the big names are and so on, but I don't watch a lot. But I'll watch the Masters. I'll watch the major tournaments. I love the British Open or the Open because I can get up and have my breakfast and watch it. But I'm not really somebody who follows it closely. What are a couple of things that when I tune in, I should be paying attention to see what happens?
Watch the how crisp the passing is. The U.S., there was a guy that I hadn't heard of until this year. His name is Chris Richards. He made, and you might have seen it on TV, he made 83 straight passes in a row, and that set a record, I think, for a U.S. team. So the passing is one thing. Like, the Argentinians pass the ball very well. But then there's a team like Switzerland. They get the lead, and they essentially play stall ball, and that's what Italy used to do. But the better teams are kind of always on the attack. Well, and for instance, Spain has a great counterattack. So somebody will go after them, but then Spain has the ability to do a very quick or a fast counterattack where they will come back at you, and more often than not, they end up scoring. And Portugal will be the same way. Both Spain and Portugal have great counterattacks. I have a feeling Australia will be a more defensive team. I think that the U.S. this time has more speed than I have ever seen from them. So we'll watch the speed of the midfielders, because they're like this Tyler Adams on the United States. He was all over the field the other day, as was Chris Richards, and Pulisic was really good in the offensive half, but that's his job. So he's an outside striker. So you watch how they pass and then how they play defense. Scotland, for instance, will also play a stall ball because that lends itself to their style of play.
Mike, is there of course, you know, it's always easy. When you're having an adult beverage, it's always easy to get somebody to argue with you, right? I said something to the effect of, and Kevin's got me watching a little lacrosse. and there is some, you got to shoot within a minute or something, or 30 seconds or some
shot clock. Yeah.
And of course,
it's 80 seconds.
Well, of course, the guy that was having a beer next to me played, and he's 60. He played lacrosse in college. He was adamant that there is no such thing. And I go, yeah, there is. There is now. It was last week. I just watched it.
Well, yeah, there just used to be.
Yeah, actually. So I guess my question is there any movement anywhere in the soccer world to stop people when you got a one goal league of just passing the ball around in the back thing for a whole half? I mean, is there any?
No, there is no movement to do that, because that's why people, some people disagree with this about the beautiful game, but they do play stall ball. Another kind of addition this time that I forgot about is they've essentially added the hydration breaks. Okay, so they played in gutter the last time, and, that's the desert, and they didn't do hydration breaks because I think for the most part they were playing in air-conditioned stadiums. But this time, because, they're playing in the U.S. and Mexico and Canada where when it's hot, and they're doing these hydration breaks, that way the network gets essentially an additional timeout to do a commercial. So, and then at the end of the half, every time you have what's called the stoppage time. And now there's an automatic 3 minutes added in the stoppage time. So, so that the half is always lengthened by at least 3 minutes, and it's going to be more like five or six. So watch the stoppage time too, because there's been some scoring actually in the stoppage time.
I was going to ask you about stoppage time anyway, because one of the things that I wonder, I get what stoppage time is about, and for those, you can tell me if I explain it right, but basically there are a number of times during the game, while the clock is running, where a guy might be down on the ground for a little while, for a minute, kind of writhing in pain because he got kicked in the shin or above, or a little higher, and there's all kinds of other things that will delay the game a little bit. And so the referees are supposed to keep track of all of that. And then at the end, they say, well, you had 7 minutes of this time, so we're going to tack on those 7 minutes at the end of the game. Is that the end of the half? Is that a reasonable explanation?
Yes, Kevin, that's okay. It's a perfectly reasonable explanation. I'm pretty sure at the World Cup, that they have a timekeeper allocated for that, one of those many refs,
somebody's job to track it.
Right, exactly.
But Mike, there's only one ref, right?
Blow the damn whistle, stop the clock, take care of the situation, and then wind the clock again, like every other sport with a clock.
That's not the way they do it.
Mike, there's still only one ref, right?
There's one main ref, but there's also two assistant refs working the sidelines and looking for onside calls.
My brother tells me that all the offside calls now are made by TV, and they just call the guys on the sideline that there's an offside.
No, Dan's partially correct. The guys still can call on and offside, but it's verified by the TV crew.
Okay.
And I think they're all in New York for this thing.
Major question I wanted to ask you. Kevin, think up a question while I remember what the hell I was talking about. Do you have a? Is FIFA still, considered the biggest? I know what I wanted to say. Somebody said somewhere, we need a commercial break. Find a name for it, right?
That's why they came up with the hydration breaks.
Well, just like the 2 minute warning in college. Why do we need a 2 minute warning? The clock's right there for everybody to see. Call a commercial break something. Let's call it the 2 minute warning. You see, one of the networks didn't come back from the hydration break, and they missed 30 seconds of soccer, and FIFA was all over wanting to fine them and everything because they didn't come back fast enough.
Who, Fox?
I don't know if it was in this country or where it was. It might not have been here.
Yeah.
But
there's three. I'm pretty sure there's three networks televising it. It's Fox, Fox Sport 1, Telemundo, and Peacock has the games, too. I don't know how they work both NBC and Fox together, but I'm sure the money, NBC probably paid money, so.
Well, I was at a adult beverage last night in a local place, and of course, this guy always wants to talk to me. He says they're on in two different languages. And he was, I get a load of this. He was pissed that the languages weren't English in whatever, like if you're playing Iraq, he wanted to listen to the game and what would that be, Farsi? He goes,
no, Iraq would be, I'm not sure about what, some form of Arabic, but.
Well, whatever. I mean, he goes, yeah, you can only listen to him in Spanish and in English. And he goes, I want to listen to it in the Iran language. And I go, who's going to do that? Plus, I said, how would you follow the game? He goes, I couldn't, but I at least want to hear it. I'm going, you run into odd people, just saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you watching, if I was going to watch a game in the next day, which one do I want to watch? Well, last night it was Argentina and somebody else played, right? It was a good one?
Yeah, it was Argentina and Algeria. Today, Portugal and the Democratic of Congo, and then also England and Croatia are playing. So those are the two games to watch.
Is there any chance of any total, what did Bill Murray say, a total outlier winning this thing, or is it going to be France or Germany?
No, I don't think it'll be a total outlier, but I think you'll have a total outlier in the final eight. I think Morocco actually has a chance, because the way they played against Brazil in their opening game, I mean, that was number six in the world against number seven. And it kind of went, you know, Morocco played really well in part of the first half, and then Brazil kind of closed it out well. And then in the second half, Brazil started out pretty well, and then Morocco more or less closed out the game looking. But I think that's going to be how some of these better games will be. Like the England and Croatia today, that's the game of that group. So whoever wins that game, or if it ends up a tie, then we'll see what happens. And
it's a 90-minute game. It is, you know, it is hard to hold up that long against a superior team. Even if you can stall it out, even if you can do all of that, you know, that's why, you know, in so many other sports, you say, can I shorten the game at all? So that if I can get out and get a lead, then I can shorten the game and try and get this over with quickly. I think it's, you know, it is really hard to get upsets. They're out there to be had, especially in these early rounds. I see a lot of upset draws, but you know, a game that goes on for 90 minutes or longer, once they add the stoppage time, really, really hard to prevail if the other team is superior.
Kevin,
you're right, Kevin. That's exactly right.
Well, it's my niece's boyfriend who played soccer, a real good softball player. I said, Dan, how come you would think when the scores are like 1-0 or 2-1 or something, that there'd be all kinds of upsets, because all you need is one lucky goal and you're sort of in. He goes, you would think that, but it really doesn't happen. I mean, so he essentially was agreeing with Kevin that it's like hockey. If you're the faster team for an hour, even though it may seem like it's a 1-0 game, you don't get the upsets that you would think you would get. That, you know, that the crummiest team would score one goal and then keep away for 90 minutes. It's really hard to do, I think, isn't it?
That's correct. It is. And for the most part, you know, soccer games, well, football games, soccer games, whatever, they're over in the 2 hours. You know, you've got the two halves of 45 minutes apiece, and then a little bit, at halftime. And so it's, you know, it's just like baseball was struggling to make the 2 hour mark. Well, soccer has never struggled to make that 2 hour mark. It only goes overtime or whatever when you're in the later rounds. They might start having tiebreakers, and that's when the game gets extended. That's when they might go 2.5 hours.
When you bet, there's no like two goal spread. It's all money line, right?
No, I think there's spreads also, but I don't bet on it, Tom, and I never have, so I don't really know.
Well, I mean, it'd be, you know, with that low scoring of a game, it'd be kind of hard to give a you know, a 2.5 goal edge to somebody.
Well, I bet you there was you know, whether Germany would score 5 goals or 4 goals when they played Curacao, I bet you there was money riding on the number of goals they would score.
Well, yeah, well, there's that. There's all those kinds of bets. I mean, just in general, you know, football is, you know, they're favored by 6 or something.
Right.
I would think soccer would be more like it's, you know, 150 to, you know, whatever, minus 150 to whatever it is. Just, but is there any goalie who's good enough to carry their team, you think? Or
well, I'll tell you what, the Cape Verde goalie, he made 7 dramatic saves against Spain, and Spain is always tough, so he might be able to carry them a little farther. We'll see. I just don't think they're going to have enough talent to match up, although I'm sure they surprised Spain the other day. Spain probably thought they were going to walk all over them, and then the goalie plays, you know, his tail off, and then they stayed in the game because of the goalie.
If you use up your 4 or 5 people and then somebody gets hurt, you got to play one down, right?
That's correct.
And so the other, so 10 of the people are probably never going to see the field in the entire World Cup thing unless a bunch of guys get hurt.
No, they have it. I think they may see the field, but they may see it against rather minor competition. They'll see it in the first 2 rounds. They won't see it in the more critical rounds.
How much difference is there between the top 5 guys and the bottom? It seems like all these guys would be good.
On all the teams, I think they're pretty competitive. So,
well, are you gonna give this until when does this thing end? Is it as long as the NBA playoffs?
I think it ends on July 19th. For some
reason. And where's that? Where's the final match?
The final is in New York City. Well, in New York, New Jersey. So MetLife. And I'm sure it'll be maybe 7 at night, maybe 9. It'll probably end up being 9 get the West Coast.
If soccer gods are listening, they're gonna fine you for saying MetLife?
Well, at least you understand what MetLife Stadium is.
Yeah.
You
know? But yeah, that's the problem. Well, Kevin, weren't you the guy that said when were the Olympics in London? Was that 8 years ago?
I think it was 2000.
Well, Kevin, didn't you say that if Coca-Cola like bought the sponsorship, that anybody who's had a Pepsi sign on their building in London for 30 years had it covered up or something?
I don't remember that because I was only focused on Coca-Cola sponsoring the Beijing Olympics. So
yeah, so it was either you or Lou was saying at the time, maybe it was somewhere that if you have a, like if Kentucky Fried became a sponsor and you had a Popeyes sign 2 blocks from the stadium, even though it's been there for 40 years, you had to cover it up. That's wild. How do you sign a deal like that with your building? I
mean, well, FIFA ends up doing a lot of talking, and you know, they used to be probably the most corrupt organization in the world, and you can see when you're watching some of these games how all the FIFA royalty are up in the primo boxes. Now how that happens, I don't know, but they must get an allocation of seats and probably boxes too.
How the hell do you become a FIFA royalty?
If you're on the commission for your country, I think that's the beginning of the process.
It sounds like something you should do.
Oh, I would love to do it, Tom, but it's, I haven't been involved in soccer professionally, amateur. Well, I helped coach my son early on, but other than that, I mean, you got to come up through the ranks.
Start out as a FIFA lackey before you can get into the.
I bet if you got dough, they'll work with you.
Well, I was surprised the other day. They showed Jill Ellis, who used to be the U.S. women's team coach when we won the World Cup and all that, and she was up in the. So she's some sort of an advisor now to FIFA because of her success on the field. And I'm sure there's Germans that are up there and Spanish and whatever. And it's just like Fox now has like 3 or 4 crews on these games because they got so many games going on. So
I bet there's good food and booze in those boxes.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
You got me jealous now. You would think Kevin would get us into one of these boxes. He's a professor, for God's sake.
No, you're the guy that should be getting us into these boxes. Oh, you're the big famous podcaster.
You know what? I was actually called that the other day when I went to Bill's, our buddy Bill's funeral. His sister goes, "You're famous." And I go, "I think your brother's more famous than me from building water treatment plants that are still standing." But anyway, it's you know, I guess we are a little bit famous, huh? A little bit? Something?
Yeah, quasi.
Are you going to try and go to any of these games, Mike?
No, I should have. I did not look into it, Tom. I mean, I saw what it cost, and I knew there'd be, like, some of these. Boston was essentially invaded by Scotsmen because they were having a heck of a time up there, and Kansas City was last night. That was all mostly Argentinians in the crowd, so the ticket purchase and then tying the visas into all this. Somebody's done a great job at getting all of these people into these different cities, and Brazil and Morocco in New York City the other day. I mean, you had essentially half the stadium Brazil and half the stadium Morocco. So
we had a little taste of this.
That Scotland thing's got to be fun because, you know, there's nobody that can understand a Boston accent. And then on top of it, there's nobody that can understand a Scottish accent.
Right. So
the communication throughout that city should be fun.
Yeah. Well, and the Socceroos, you know, Australia playing the U.S. And I'm not sure where they're playing. I think it's in the San Francisco area. So it's either San Francisco or no, excuse me. It's going to be in Seattle. So, and that's, you know, at like 3 o'clock on Juneteenth. So,
Mike, we had a little taste of this in Chicago last summer when the Irish did they have a national rugby team or something? Kevin, I don't know. Anyway, they played the New Zealand All Blacks in Soldier Field.
Right. Well, Ireland has a good rugby team too.
Well, they came. They had won 4 years ago, so the All Blacks were out for revenge, and they ended up winning, but it was a really good game. Well, the bar downstairs in our building somehow tied into the Irish guys, and they closed the street in the back, and they had a tent and all this stuff. And they did not, those guys, they were there from the time the place opened. I walked through there on the Friday night, the night before. I never saw so many big Irish guys in my life. It must have, every guy there must have. I think they went through in 2 days something like 170 cases of Guinness or something. They had to keep ordering it. And on Saturday night, they're trying to kick people out at 2, and they almost had to call the police to get them out of there. They were there since 10. They were serious about it.
Are the markets closed on Friday?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So,
okay.
No, you can't give us a report on Friday, but how about next Wednesday? We'll go through the list and see who's left.
All right, that's fine.
Or you take care of yourself, bud.
All right, you guys too.
SP futures down 75 cents, right. NASDAQ futures up 100. Kevin, do we have our other guys on yet or not yet?
The rest is on, and that Russell guy is on. So,
oh, God, I saw him last week. He was here. I went to see a group of his people, and I had a terrific time. Larissa, give us a comment on soccer.
Russell has people?
He had people.
Well, yeah, they're nice to me, and they follow me around, and they listen to me because I hold grades over their head. Yes, that's the only people I have.
Oh, Kevin, we talked about it. It was your kind of group. Some of the people, were from Ivy, and had gone there, and everybody was. Russell helped me. I'm going to say average age 31-ish.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Everybody I talked to was terrific. Especially like the lady was the nurse, and now she's doing this.
Well, she was at AI. Her background is awesome. She started out of undergrad. These were graduate students, and she started out of undergrad and was working for AIG.
Yeah,
from like 2003 to 2010, she was there for the whole thing. Which is really interesting to talk to her about, and she loved it so much she decided to go into nursing for a while, and now she's back in the business world.
And then what is the nighttime group? Is it how many year of a project is that for them when they do it at night?
Two. It's a 2-year project.
So they're going how many nights a week?
They all work full time,
but they got to be going at least 2 nights a week, then, if they're going to get it done.
Yeah,
in 2.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, that's a tough schedule.
It is. I did a couple of degrees that way. I know you did. You know, you worked, went to school. I think I'm probably the most sympathetic professor to those guys, just because I, you know, did a couple of my, did my PhD that way, where I was working full time at SIBO at the same time.
I did two classes in the summer because they gave you a break on tuition, which meant I could graduate in April. I had a job with the Chicago Board of Education where I could do my homework at work. I still hated it. God's sake! It was in the 190 building, no air conditioning, Russell.
Oh, my goodness.
And you're sitting there, and I was taking advanced accounting. Nothing could be worse at 9:45 at night, especially when it's 10 to 10, and the guy goes, he finishes a topic, and you go, you're putting your books together, and he goes, well, we still got 10 minutes. We can start something else. And you're sitting there going, what the hell?
Or you're ready to get out. Everybody wants to get the hell out of there. Any questions? Yes, I have a question. Shut up.
All of a sudden, you're winging something at the back of the guy's head. But it was the last accounting course I ever took and never wanted again. And I had no interest. Anyway, but it's tough. When I didn't have kids at home, I didn't have a real job during the day. Not that being a janitor isn't a real job, but it wasn't a real job. I can't imagine going home and having like three kids there or something. For God. Anyway, my hat's off to them.
A lot of the material, and I do Saturday morning office hours for these guys, and they show up for a couple hours on Saturday mornings. And people do show up with their kids and stuff.
Really?
I've actually found that if I'm teaching online and, like, you know, a kid's all curious and everything, if I say, hey, come here, and I say hi to them and everything, they'll leave their parents alone for the next couple hours.
Really?
Yeah, if you and to the point where I had a woman who had three kids at home, she was divorced, and she was trying to do this degree, and she didn't have anybody to watch her kids when she was trying to do class. So she would show up 5 minutes early, and I would practically do a puppet show for the kids, and then they'd go do their thing, and she'd do class.
See, now, if you brought the couple of Frenchies with, they could play with the Frenchies.
Oh yeah, my dogs would say hi to the kids, all kinds of crap like that. I found if they're bothering their parents, that if I address them, they're like, okay, that's what's going on, and then they're on to the next thing.
Yeah, it is always interesting. I don't know if you've done much with this, but I do Saturday morning classes pretty regularly, and those for working people are very popular. I do them live stream. Uh-huh. So all you got to do is get out of bed and fire up Zoom. But you know, there's a lot of people with kids that get up to get the kid, you know, feed the kids, make sure that they're not going to kill each other for the next 3 hours, and we always take a break so they can go check on them, you know, walk the dog, whatever you got to do, and those tend to work out really, really well for people.
Yeah, no, we don't have those on our schedule, but during COVID, what I started doing was just opening up my Zoom on Saturday mornings for office hours, and I was still at Loyola at the time, and it just seemed to go very well, and I transferred it to IU, and every Saturday morning I have, depending on what's going on, sometimes I'll have 30, I've had a Saturday office hour session that went almost 8 hours once. For a derivatives class, it was just we were really digging into the weeds and stuff. I'm I'll answer questions like about is now a good time to refinance my house? Will you take a look at my 401k? I mean, I do all of that kind of stuff.
Really good for you.
Office hours, you know, just to get to know them a bit better. But it makes me better at my job as well, because the main motivation is all their assignments are due on Sunday nights. And if they have them complete by Saturday morning, I'll check them over before they turn them in.
Well, Kevin, how many times did you go see your professor? I never did.
Oh, I never did either.
I didn't even go to class, so why am I going to go see my professor otherwise?
I actually went once, and I think he might still be alive. Remember Professor Danilo in the economics group?
Nope.
He was teaching a graduate two-part class on money and banking. And I wanted to take a graduate level course. I mean, it didn't do me any good over Chicago, but I went to see him. I said, can I take the second half of this? And he goes, yeah. First half was all banking, and the second half's going to be all, you know, monetary theory and so forth. He says, by the way, I'm letting you in. A lot of people don't want me to let undergrads in, so you better do a good job so I don't look bad. And I go, okay. I mean, God, was he good. What a terrific guy. And I did well. And the only thing he did, he screwed me on in Notre Dame. If you had an A average going, you didn't have to take the final. And you go play golf for the last 2 weeks.
If you were a senior. Yeah,
yeah, if you were a senior. So I said to him, hey, do I have to take the final? He goes, I know you got the A going. He said, but do me a favor, will you? You're my guinea pig for letting undergrad in. How about taking the final for me just as a favor? And I go, okay. I mean, what am I going to tell the guy? No, he was the nicest guy in the world. So I did. I didn't get a chance to play golf that day, but I got over it, you know, type of thing. But he was like the only guy I ever talked to. I mean, this is kind of the new thing where you actually talk to your professors. When I say new, in the last 30 years. Larissa, do you have people come in and talk to you all the time, or do you just go to class and go home?
I have like two or three students who will talk to me, and then nobody else does.
Did they come in and bitch about grades, or are they just real talk?
I did have a period where some students were complaining about their grades. But I did not include them as the few students who actually talked to me.
Okay. I can't.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't get a lot of people complaining about grades either. Every once in a while, someone will look and say, you know, you did this, and here's what the rubric says, because we always have a grading rubric for all of our assignments.
Yep.
I'll look at that and say, you know what, you're right. Okay, I'll fix it. That's happened maybe twice, and I've been doing this 12 years. So it's, you know, that's not a big deal. But what's funny is, you know, our old friend Bob Golden used to teach an accounting class over at Notre Dame, and he had people fighting him all the time about the grades. So, you know, there's something in that Notre Dame grad school culture, whether it's entitlement, whether it's... you know, whether it's competitiveness, I'm not sure what it was, and Bob's not around for us to ask him to talk about it now, so most unfortunately, so, you know, I can't really explain it, but he was dealing with that all the time, because we used to talk, and I'd say to him, no, I don't have that problem at all, nobody, you know, everybody just rides with it.
Well, Kevin, didn't, or Russell, wasn't there a period of time where how much money the company refunded you for your class had to do with what grade you got?
I've had some of those.
Yeah, I had that. I had that when I went to grad school.
So that would cause somebody to bitch.
But I didn't get more for an A versus a B. It's just that I got more for A. You know, A's and B's were 100%. They didn't differentiate that much. But A's and B's were 100%, and then C's were, you know, 75 or something like that. So I just didn't get any.
Well, that
you know, like I said, I goofed off as an undergraduate, and then I had graduate school for the enriching educational experience.
Well, it's like $7,000 a class. The difference between 80% and 100 is kind of a lot.
It can be, yeah.
Well, what I want to ask you guys, I mean, and Kevin, feel free. I decided to get out of we talk about economic policy of you know, countries, and Russell, we talked a little bit about this in front of the group the other night, and I've decided to, well, not necessarily leave the U.S. in terms of monetary policy and stock market movement and who the winners are and who the losers are. So for some reason, I locked on to Japan. And for the last 2 days, I've been talking about it. And I can't believe a greater example of just who the hell's running the place, who's the winners and who the losers are, if you look at what happened in Japan. Since the war, and they started, which is, you know, it's only 3 months. If you're dead, it's long enough. They probably were getting spanked by oil prices as bad as anybody, right? They've been fighting their currencies. They have this inflation going on in their economy for the first time. John Lee was over there. He said people there are bitching a blue streak about the inflation because they really didn't have any, right, Russell and Larissa, for like a long period of time. I mean, we're talking about this, you know, the price of a Twinkie hadn't changed over there in 20 years, and all of a sudden it has. And, you know, it's probably not inflation here like the 70s, but it's more than they're used to. Yet, at the end of the day, you look and you see the market is up at least 10% since the start of the war. The money supply is up almost 2% in 3 months, which is unheard of for those guys. And you look and see the government owns 9% of the market, and the banks own 29%. So all the right people have made out like a bandit on this. essentially the rest of the population getting it where the sun don't shine, and they're all blaming it all on the war. As your buddy Rahm Emanuel once said, never waste a good crisis, eh? I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at that, but it's right in front of you. And you don't have to look at the politicians. You don't have to look at who won the election and how the other guy had been different, or lady, whoever. It's right in front of you how the policy is working, and it's exactly kind of what we talk about around the edges. Whoever's running this stuff knows what they're doing. I don't know if you think I'm nuts with this one, but Larissa, you speak first, because you'll tell me if I'm nuts.
You know, I actually have not been following this story, but I do know that they haven't had inflation in a long time, and it's always a very jarring experience when it starts. I'm hoping that they do have everything placed properly so that this doesn't become a larger problem, because I'm always worried about contagion. So that's what I have to say.
Well, Russell, what do you mean? It's to me, it's so obvious if you're a monetarist what they're doing. It's scary.
You mean as far as who's allowing
the
inflation?
Yeah, I mean who the winners are. Who the winners are and who the losers are. I mean, the government's a huge winner. They own 9% of the stock market, for God's sake. And so are the banks. They were all zombie banks. Now they're not.
Yeah, I mean they all own the stock market because nobody else would buy it.
Well, and plus, I'm sure you still have...
I mean, that really was kind of what was going on over there, was just to try to maintain status quo. And my fear for Japan is they fight all of these trends like the UK did back in the 80s. And, you know, then we've got some scumbag like George Soros that makes $1 billion off of taking the other side of Japan, and then they start funding all of the, Black Lives Matters and all of those kind of things. So I hope that's not the direction that Japan goes in, but that's exactly what could happen with what's going on there if it replays how it worked out in the UK.
Well, but how, I mean, if you look at the new Fed chairman, who appears to have somewhat of a conservative bent, which really kind of surprised me that he's, but does he really? I mean, in his testimony in front of Congress, I mean, a couple of the Democrats were all over him about how much money he has and how much wealth. Now, if he comes in, I have no idea what Volcker's portfolio was, or if he had one, or God knows, I know he didn't have much in the way of suits and ties, but, I mean, do you really expect anybody, this guy, to come in, put the bottleneck on money supply, and watch his investments go down 20% if the market goes down 20%? I don't see anywhere near in his body that he has a cell like that in there to let that happen. Yet, if you go back to what you and I were talking about at dinner the other night, or over cocktails, he's not going to let that happen. How much can we push this forward where 85% of the people are getting jammed by the inflation, and 15% of the people are totally winning? I don't see the 15% of the people ever turning that around on their own. I don't see how it could happen. I mean, and I sure don't want to see some massive cataclysmic event like 1929 that causes them to do it. What's the solution in there? Is there a middle ground?
I really don't know what the question is in here.
Well, I'm saying what we're doing now is we're spending a lot of dough. We're pushing money into the system.
Yeah.
We're running asset prices up, which is causing some people to be gleeful and other people, most people, to not be so gleeful. Now, what's the end of the road? Do you keep doing it for another 20 years to where the stock market's at 8 million and everybody else is paying God knows what for a chicken sandwich? I mean, how far can you go? I mean, in 1929, an amazing amount of wealth was in the hands of 1% of the people. And look what happened. We don't want that to happen. But is there a chance that somebody in Washington, whatever side of the party they're on, is going to say, we can't keep doing this. We got to at least back it off a little bit. I don't see that happening from either side. I mean, I really don't.
No, it has to become a disaster first.
I was hoping you'd have a better answer than that, but you're probably right.
But that's what it has to become, a disaster first.
Because
there's not. I mean, what's the motivation for you know, my congressman to step up and say, "Hey, guys, I see a train wreck way down the road, so we all need to bite the bullet right now."
Yeah, I don't.
You know, I mean, no, in you know, you're just going to get shouted down. And if you got to get reelected every 2 years, why would you do anything that, that involves the short term biting the bullet if you're going to lose your job over it?
Well, I think you're. Go ahead, Alyssa.
Now, if there are term limits, maybe they could do some of the more difficult stuff. And sorry, Larissa, I know I'm talking over you.
No, but, I also don't think that most people understand that the stock market going up doesn't negatively affect them. I think there is a lack of understanding of how that's impacting the bottom part of the K. I think most people, when they hear that the stock market is going up, they think that means the economy is doing well, and perhaps they're just not doing well. They don't see the broader picture. They don't understand how it necessarily fits together. So it would be a difficult sell for even those people to want to participate in seeing like a sell-off of the stock market.
Well, Larissa, on the political level, and we do have political levels here, and we've also talked about more with Carl about the makeup of the politics and how if you're on the end of the bench in the House of Representatives, how you might as well not be there, which is pretty scary on top of it, but that's maybe another discussion. I have to believe that on the top end, you know, the Musks and the Bezos of the world are saying, whatever you do, don't let this market go down. Okay, but on the bottom end, I have to believe that in a lot of districts in this country, maybe 80% of them, representatives actually are out and about. I don't know about senators, but representatives are actually out and about at the store, and they actually answer the phone, and they're getting...
Oh, you're so wrong.
Well, I don't know.
These guys don't. No, they're not minding the store. And where I was going to go the next time I cut in was just about the if you're in the House of Representatives, and I really consider the House of Representatives to, you know, their job is really to represent us, and I feel like senators should be representing big picture. And in the House, they're supposed to be representing what their constituents want. That's not how it works anymore. They're representing party. And if they're, you know, if there's something that's absolutely terrible for the western suburbs, but, you know, I think my guy's a Democrat, but the Democrats really want to get that pushed through, my guy's going to vote for it even if it's terrible for his constituents. Because if he doesn't stick with the party, he might not get reelected. The party's more important to him getting reelected than his constituents are.
Well, it truly
used
is.
It used to be that the constituents were. You wanted to keep the people that voted for you happy. You want to show up at all the 4th of July crap and everything. But now it's for a lot of them, it's party before country.
Well, I think Trump has done that.
I think that might be the core of the problem.
Well, Trump has done that to an nth degree, because he'll primary you. I mean, he'll run somebody against
you. I'm not talking about, like, right now. I'm talking about, you know, the last 20 years. You know, that in order to get reelected, you need to you know, you've got to have your party's backing. And if your party doesn't back you properly, you know, you ended up getting unseated by somebody like AOC.
Whoop.
You know, there are things like that. So you've got to... I think the big issue with anybody doing anything that's in our interest is that if our interests don't align with, you know, whichever party happens to be in charge, we're kind of screwed.
I absolutely can't disagree with you, but I want Larissa to be the referee here, because this a long time ago, I was on the board of the SIBO, right? I mean, it was, you know, this is not last week, and it's a long time ago. We would go to Washington, and we'd have these, you know, shindigs where you invite representatives and so forth. And Russell and Larissa, there were, I mean, I am 100% in agreement with Russell. I mean, I'm not going to show up in Danny Davis's office and have the guy listen to me, I don't think. Because, you know, he's a big city rep. But the dudes I met from these smaller areas, they were so different than the people we're used to here. I mean, I think a downstate guy, in a way, is much closer to his people than maybe somebody here in the city. But anyway, I was talking to this guy from Reading, Pennsylvania, and he happened to be a Democrat. Listen, dude was bigger than me. Big Irish guy, red hair, big broad shoulders. He was the sheriff or something. And there was a big crime, and they arrested the guy, like, right away. And he got this huge reputation of being a real good guy. Couldn't have been 35. And it, all of a sudden, the Republican guy retires, and the job's open. They ask him to go run for it, and he runs. And actually, the Republican guy supported him because he really liked him. So here he is in Congress as a freshman. And he's like, he goes, it's not like Chicago. He goes, everything I do is front page of the Reading paper. Because the people in Chicago, they don't even know what the guy voted for and don't care. Big cities here. And he was on the two rookie committees. One was Armed Services, not the double deep one, but just the regular Armed Services. And he was on Agriculture, where you can go hide there for a while. But he goes, it was the year that it was a no, what, don't ask, don't tell, about the gay thing in the Army. And he goes, I'm voting for, I had a vote for that, and just what you're talking about. Evidently, Dan Rostenkowski was chairman of wherever that committee came out of, and or something. And he said, vote for it to go to the floor, or vote no to go to the floor, and once it goes to the floor, no, the other way around. Vote for it to go to the floor, and once it goes to the floor, vote against it, because I know the people in Reading want no part of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And the other guy, I mean, and he said the other one was all the floods on the Missouri River. And evidently, there is a Missouri River in Vermont or someplace. And the guy who was from Vermont demanded money for his Missouri River, even though it didn't flood. But these guys were, he goes, yeah, my phone is ringing off the hook. And how am I going to vote on this don't ask, don't tell? I mean, it was a totally different world than what you just described, Russell, and what I would agree with you and what our world is for these guys in these small areas. I mean, maybe that's all changed.
Yeah, and you just said that, you know, he had to vote yes on something to get it to the floor before he voted no, which that, you know, that's caving into the party. His constituents probably didn't even want him to agree to that much.
But he thought it was the right thing to do. He thought that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was way better than just kick all the gays out of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a big issue back then.
I remember that. Yeah.
But, I mean, listen, I'm just talking about the difference between the feedback in like a city rep versus a, what's the rep like in where you guys are? Does everybody know the guy or girl?
I live in Chicago.
I know. I'm talking about Larissa. She's in Wet Lafayette.
So I live. I don't know my representative at all.
Okay.
And I agree with Russell. I think that things are different. I think people are very party loyal. I think that's where you get your funding, because it's now that we have career politicians, we're in situations where they need to figure out how to get initial funding. Most people are not independently wealthy like our current president. So this is a very challenging time. If you would like to get into politics, you need to feed into one of the parties so that you get that foundation and that basically that funding and that voter base.
So I sounds like, but I don't think you're either one of you are saying this. Sounds like if there's 300 calls to the person or lady regarding inflation, they're just immune to that. I don't think they are.
Oh, I think they are. I think they dodge those calls. I think they have their assistants take their calls.
I sat in a congressperson's office once. You know, when you take your kids to, this is the one thing they'll respond to. When you take your kids to D.C., there's certain things that the only way you can get tickets is through your congressperson. My congressperson at the time was actually Bobby Rush.
I met him. He's a decent.
He's a decent guy. But I mean, I'm in freaking Hinsdale, and they had gerrymandered. There's a section of Hinsdale that was gerrymandered into Bobby Rush's district. It was the Cook County part of Hinsdale.
Really?
So
wow.
he was my rep. So what we actually did was the rep that was from Hinsdale but didn't specifically represent us. My wife's family knew her, so that's who we went through to get our tickets. And we're waiting for one of the little tours in the office, and we showed up about a half hour early. And I'm just sitting there listening to the receptionist. There were like four interns that were doing nothing but fielding calls. And there would, and most of the conversation would go, "I understand, I got you. I will definitely let you know, let them know." And then there were some they would call up, you know, griping about something that was a state issue, and the intern would say, "Well, you really need to speak to your state rep about that. That's not a federal thing." But yeah, those calls are definitely getting intercepted. Definitely getting intercepted. And you know, if we go back just a few years, around some of the frustration around COVID, et cetera, you would see constituents just really rip into some of their reps, and you know, reps would walk out of meetings because they just didn't want to deal with it, et cetera. We just don't really have a representative form of government right now.
You realize that
we've got a form of government that represents one of two parties, depending on which way you vote.
Well, you realize I was on the conspiracy cliff, and I expected you two to pull me back, and you pushed me over.
Well, it's all about party, man. You can't get I looked into running for Congress because I had gotten elected to a school board, and the rep out here in Hinsdale was retiring, and I was like, well, you know, what is involved in it? And I don't know if you remember Adam Angieski that I had on once.
Yeah.
Who ran for government. He actually passed away a couple of years ago. He just gave me some insight into everything. And if you want to run for Congress, you pretty much need to prove that you have the financial backing so that the party doesn't have to contribute too much to get you in there. You know, that's the first up front. You got to show that you have like a quarter mil in the bank that you're going to spend on the campaign, and then they might think about matching you.
I think there's a difference between the two parties there, right? What you guys are saying, you know, I think is Carl tells the same story because he helped a guy get elected in Florida to represent a representative, and when he got to Congress, all they did was say, you know, you got to vote with us, you got to give up your old cell phone and use our cell phone so we know who you're calling. The guy couldn't wait to get out of there after like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just like you're describing, which if you take it a little further, it really means that out of the 435 people in the House, you know, 400 of them are useless, which I guess that's...
They are. They're minions.
I guess that...
The ones that we see on national TV all the time are really the ones that are, you know, they're sitting in meeting rooms and they're saying, all right, everybody, you got to vote this way. You got to vote that way. And, you know, there's, you know, probably a couple of dozen people that are making the decisions, and then 400 minions that are just following along with whichever side they have.
Well, I
got to
believe that any one of the three of us would not sit at the end of the bench quietly.
Yeah, but we would, but then we wouldn't get elected in the first place. So what does it matter?
We wouldn't be invited to the party.
Yeah.
I don't think Larissa or you or I would ever be shy about giving our opinion.
Again,
you know,
at the party, you can't give the opinion.
When I was on the Board of Education, the people, you know, there are people that are like groupies to these things that like to show up to every meeting. They referred to me as the Clarence Thomas of the Board of Education because I hardly ever said anything. And the reason that I hardly ever said anything was, you know, most things weren't controversial. Why do we have to spend an extra 5 minutes listening to why I agree with everybody else? You know, the only times that I would actually speak up was when I had and if I did, people knew that what I was talking about, you know, that I actually had an issue with it, that I just wasn't grandstanding like about half the people on that board.
Did you ever watch the little skit?
I would probably be like that. I probably would just, you know, make my decisions. If people ask me why I made my decisions, I'd tell them why, but I wouldn't. The lack of the grandstanding would probably work its way into I just kind of keep my mouth shut and vote the way I'm going
to
vote.
Did you watch the little I'll send it to you, the Bodhi is the Boston Legal skit about Clarence Thomas?
I've seen it. Yeah,
isn't that a riot?
Yeah,
we already had a $10,000 bet that he could make Clarence Thomas say something.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway. But that was, believe it or not, as much as I run my mouth here, when I was on the board, it was like, you know, okay, yet, you know, anybody got any opinions? And there were a couple of people on the board that just wouldn't, you know, they owe me about 100 hours of life.
Larissa, you have
nothing. And a lot of what is said by, you know, and they don't even have to say it. I think you can get stuff into the congressional record, even if you never said it on the floor. You can just kind of insert it in there.
Larissa, are you having trouble listening to the description of the zip lip Russell?
I fully believe it. I also don't believe he likes to waste time in meetings.
That I would agree with.
Meetings ain't work.
How about we go to break here and we come back? you guys tell us whether I should be buying SpaceX for my clients or not. Boy, plus I'll show you about a trade in there. I mean, I don't usually talk about individual trades, but S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 180. We're bouncing back from yesterday. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it. You could junk it. Or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right
here, right now, right now. Well, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 550. NASDAQ futures up 182. Now we're still running with the September and June running next to each other here. The June will drop off on Thursday. There's no market opening on Friday, so there won't be no Stocks and Jacks as well. Because it's a Juneteenth day, for those that haven't figured that out. A lot of other places are open, but the markets are definitely closed. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 31, 0.1%. FTSE down 7, call that flat. CAC around up 3, call that flat. So after up-down days, we're pretty much flat here. I don't know if it's because of the holiday, but we're definitely flat here today. Nikkei up 497.7%, 69,902. They're like 10,000 higher than when the war started, despite all the huge troubling they supposedly had because of oil prices and everything else. So I guess they don't. Let's never waste a good crisis. Hang Seng down 181.7%. Shanghai up 15.4%. Bonds. Creeping 10-year is up 1 basis point, 4.44. So just under the 4.45 number that people are kind of concerned with on a 10-year. Oil. Back up a little today, up 58 cents, but still 76.63, way below where it was before this deal is allegedly being signed, which would be nice if it was. RBOB up 1 cent, 2.89, so again, somewhere depending on your state and your distribution system, add 80 cents to maybe $1.10 to that, and that's probably what you're paying. I paid 3.83 last Sunday, so in the burbs. City's still 4.80, but that's a city. So I was like $1 over that, so that's where I get the number from. Gold down $9 at a rally the last couple days. 43.44 was in danger of going under 4,000, but now not anymore. Silver down 69 cents, so that's down 16 cents, sorry, to 69.85. Foreign exchange, we're 115.97 on the euro, so it's been right around this 116. The dollar strengthened a little bit because the euro was over 117 a few weeks ago, and now it's under 116. British pound, 134. It was 135.5 or so. And the yen is still over 160, which is supposed to be horrible for people over there, and yet the market goes up every day. So that's kind of what I've been talking about the last few days. Crypto down 823, 64,758. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs can't hit again.
Yeah, that's right. It is Wednesday, June 17th, 7:36 here in Chicago. And yeah, nothing but losses here for sports. Cubs lost to the Rockies 5-2. Sox lost to the Yankees 5-2. And, 12-2. And the Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 7-0. For Chicago traffic, it's actually looking a lot better today, at least compared to the sports. The inbound Kennedy from Montrose is going to take you 18 minutes. Inbound Eden from Lake Cook is going to take you 32. Eisenhower from Wolf is going to take you 26. Dan Ryan from 95th is going to take you 19 minutes. And the Stevenson from I-294 is going to take you 27 minutes. Now, finally, for Chicago weather, I actually did take a double take here, considering how close the Chicago and Phoenix weather are today. In Chicago, we're currently at 63 degrees. We're at a high of 67. We got some rain and thunderstorms, especially throughout the early evening. And then in Phoenix, pretty similar story. They're currently at 61 degrees. They're going to have a high of 70. They're going to have periods of rains and thunderstorms. A little bit more severe, though. And it can bring flooding, hail, and damaging winds, even a tornado.
Whoa. So,
that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, Larissa, did you see what happened in the Cub game the other night to Pete Crow Armstrong? The guy, he hits for the cycle in order. He had the
Oh, yeah. That poor guy, he's like a comic book, isn't he? He's the same one that was getting into it with the fan at USL or at the Guaranteed Rate or wherever the White Sox play now.
Well, when he hit the wall and went down and he didn't know he was hurt and the lady starts laughing at him and hoping he's hurt, I mean, that didn't get anybody, I think.
Oh, I know. No, it's just he seems to be on the TV for the wrong reason every once in a while. Because, well, yeah, he got picked off last night.
He got picked off after the cycle, but
after he hit for the cycle, it was it was just like, you know, can it? Because he's had a couple of funny errors as well.
But he's also considered the single best defensive player in Major League Baseball.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. But nobody wants to be judged by their absolute worst day. Hey, on the weather thing, just you know, I've got a little weather bug that lives in the basement of my house who's majoring in meteorology at Purdue, and when there are tornadoes, we will get in the car and run around and chase them and try to, you know, catch up with them, etc. She will not do that tonight because she says it's going to be that too dangerous for us to go out and try and do that. And I actually think traffic is not that bad this morning because people don't want to be caught trying to drive home in that crap tonight.
Really quick thing here. I looked more into the weather. Yeah, the Phoenix thing, I don't know what happened. Like, it looks like the website bugged where it was similar but different. Yeah, in Phoenix, they're definitely not having storms. They are 90 degrees, sunny. I thought that was so weird. So, sorry, fixing that real quick.
Russell, how does she...
She's like... Go ahead and ask your question.
How do you tell in the morning? Now, we had two horrible weather days last week. How can you tell 14 hours in advance how bad it's going to be, you know, that far when the storms haven't even formed yet? Is it all just because of...
Have you seen the movie Pressure yet?
It's all just the way that... I mean, I'm asking because I don't know. I'd love to know.
Because the movie Pressure, they demonstrate it quite well. That's the World War II one where they... did the forecast properly. You launch weather balloons, you know, a day ahead, you know, throughout the country, and what's going on in the upper atmosphere, those trends, you put together models and they give you an idea as to where the dangerous weather is going to be the next day or two.
Well, but last week it was 90 degrees and humid when that all happened and we dropped, you know, 25 degrees and... But today it's already cool. I mean, it seems like it wouldn't be as bad, but obviously it's going to be as bad, right?
Yeah, it's she's like we don't even get to go tornado chasing because it's going to be so bad.
God,
that says something because you know, last week she was standing out on the roof looking at stuff.
Well, did you get any of this down by in Lafayette? Because Indiana got tore up, northern Indiana, where they got the Audrey's old house in Ogden Dunes. A big tree came down, and I think it's totally wrecked. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't own it anymore, thank God. But Ogden Dunes had huge damage. And they don't...
Northern Indiana actually got ripped.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They
found there was 10 tornadoes now or something? That's a lot. Is your daughter taking a class from Larissa?
No, she will not take a class from Larissa. You know what? I'm going to stop myself right there. So...
I'll bet Larissa
teaches... I was getting ready to make a funny joke about...
It sounds to me like the classes Larissa teaches, everybody should take. I'd like to be in one. Larissa, do you have people from all the different schools, engineering and finance and everything? Do you get a smattering of people, or are they all just in finance?
So I teach the personal finance class, but it's a 100-level class. And I think some people are very interested in the class, I think some people are, how can I say this politely, thinking it might be an easier class. So I do get, in that particular class, I think I had 165 students enroll for that.
Wow.
So it was a big class.
Well, so you had like an auditorium that you teach in. It's not a classroom.
That one was online.
Okay. Well, do you ever get a class anymore where there's 165 people show up, or is that showing my age?
I have had very, very large lectures before. Maybe not 165, but maybe like 80.
Those
are in big lecture halls.
If you're sitting on your dead ass in your dorm, can you do that, or do you have to walk down to the classroom? This is so different from me. I mean, we always had to get up and go down there into class. Can you just hang in your dorm room and watch the class there?
So the class that I taught this past spring, you could watch it on the TV or on your computer.
Why would I be paying $20,000 for my son or daughter's room and board at Northwestern if they could be watching the TV at home?
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you get so much more out of the interaction. But as you pointed out, some students are a little bit more lazy and don't want to make that walk.
Do you do anything like take attendance? Or is that the dodo bird?
No, I take attendance. I don't count it for anything, but I keep attendance. And that way when a student... So, for example, I had a student this past spring who told me, I haven't missed that many classes. Now, this was about halfway through the semester, and I said, you've missed 9 classes. And at that point, I think we were in week, I don't know, like, let's say we're at the halfway point, so week 8. So out of 16 classes that we had, she missed 9.
Well.
And she said and then when I said that, pointed out that to her, I think she was quite surprised that she had missed that much, and it changed the dynamic of the conversation, and that's why I keep attendance. Not for grade, just for, you know, accountability.
Can you tell if they're watching? Does that count as attendance?
Yeah, you can tell if they've watched the video.
Okay, so that counts as attendance.
You can also read into how much the time they've spent on the learning management system.
Okay.
I usually don't go that route. I usually don't spend that much time evaluating. I feel like if you're taking my class, you want to take the class, and I shouldn't have to check up on you.
Well, CME Group, Terry Duffy to step down. Did you see this, Russell?
I did not see that.
Just came out. CFO Lynn Fitzpatrick to become CEO. Do you know Lynn Fitzpatrick? I do not. I know Duffy.
I do not. I know Terry.
Yeah. Anyway, I was never a huge fan, but whatever. I'm sure he didn't care much. Well, I'm a pretty good buddy of Charlie Carey, and the two of them never saw eye to eye. Anyway, he was the floor guy. He was like the vice chairman, Charlie Carey. Anyway, but Lewis, every time one of the younger people shows up on Thursday or Friday night when we have an adult beverage, and they go through their finances a little bit. I mean, I'm sitting there, where the hell's Larissa when we need her? It seems like every one of these kids, $30,000 to $70,000 in debt, making something, no chance of new car, no chance of a house, and really, no thought of starting a family. I mean, the thought of having a kid when you don't have any, when you're living hand to mouth. No, none of them have a girlfriend. What are we doing here? And every time you keep seeing this, all this student loan forgiveness, and it never seems to happen to anybody I know. I mean, what do you tell people when in class they're going to have a $200,000 nut, and by the way, they're going to make $70,000 a year maybe. And what do you tell people?
I tell them to live with their parents as long as they can.
That's probably great advice, actually. Well, but when
it is, it's awesome advice. That's what I worked full time, did graduate school at night, and lived at home for about half the time I was in graduate school.
Well, I was there.
But also, my living in home, I just kind of came and went as I pleased, starting when I was about 12. So, it wasn't, you know, some people don't necessarily want to be under under the microscope of mom and dad in their 20s, and I get that, but you know, they're just not living within their means. And I think part of the problem that with you know, the younger people is, you know, they see people doing all kinds of great fun stuff and they just feel like they're missing out, so they do those things. And you've mentioned this, where, you know, you can get a really expensive ticket to something. And was it Coachella or something like that, where over half the people that bought tickets had financed them?
Oh yeah, you were
like through one of those pay as you go thing, you know, like divided up into $475 payments to go to, you know, to go to the music festival.
Larissa, was that you that brought that up? Somebody did.
I did not.
I thought you brought it up.
Must have been Kevin.
I, you know, but. Yeah, it was. I remember. I think it was actually Kevin that brought it up, because I remember hearing it when I was on with you. So that may have been where it came from. But yeah, they're finding, you know, everybody sees everybody else living great lifestyles and stuff when they're 27, because, you know, social media, they're able to make it look like that, and they're not worried about their finances because they're trying to keep up with everybody. And then I've talked to guys coming out of college, and they're just, as far as the relationship, building a family and all that kind of stuff, they just, you know, when you see videos of young women saying they just don't need men, so why should we even try?
Well,
no, I really think that guys have been just beaten down and villainized so much that why even try? You know, over in China, yep, things have become so difficult. They have this thing called laying flat, where, you know, if a young person can't find a job and is still living at home, they just basically lay on their back all day.
I
think a lot of guys in the U.S. have kind of followed that trend as well.
It's really,
why make the big effort?
I think it's
what's
aw-
it worth?
It's,
what's aw- worth
it's awful. It's awful.
It is. You ever hear a guy, you know, talk about, why should I get, and this is the honest to God belief, you know, why should I get married, and then after we have a couple of kids, you know, we get divorced and she takes half my stuff?
Well, that's
that is the honest mentality of a lot of guys around marriage. I don't want somebody to take half my stuff when I've got very little as it is.
Well, I like Larissa's comment on this, because it, amazingly enough, years and years ago, when they still had, like, you know, Playboy magazine was stuff that everybody had to read, because, you know, Jimmy Carter, if you weren't in the interview in there, you weren't a real person, right? And they just happened to have pictures of women in there, but your best jokes, the best everything. And I read the thing, and one guy goes, why are guys sometimes reluctant to get married? And it said, well, the male mentality is, if 40 to 45% of the marriages are ending in divorce, guys don't think they're that much different than any other guy. You know, they immediately say, that could happen to me, and they're sort of reluctant. But that's kind of different than sort of what we're talking about here. I mean, if you're the guy, you like to bring something to the table. You like to have a job. You don't want to be in debt. You'd like to be able to buy a house. You'd like to be something, to have a family. And I don't.
Those things are so mentally unachievable.
I know. Well, you know, the weird part,
you just, why even try?
But Larissa, the groups that Audrey, my significant other, and good in the real estate, I mean, she talks a lot about it's the houses now, it's all cash. In her area, a lot of it's cash to cash. You know, an older couple sells their place, downsizes, it's cash, and somebody, a lot of them, there's no even mortgage involved. But with the younger people that she does put into places, and this is a gross generalization, are people where maybe the guy went to a two-year place, is an electrician, he's something, a plumber or whatever, is hooked on, maybe his dad has a plumbing company. He can save his money. And the lady he's marrying, again, it's a gross generalization, might have been a nurse for the last 7-8 years and actually has made some dough and is paid off her nursing school for 10 years ago. They actually have the down payment. They're dying to get married. Everybody's ever dying to have a family, but are planning on having a family. I don't see any of that down here with the guys working for, like, you know, FINRA or someplace. I mean, do you, Russell? The bureaucrat downtown now is like lost. They're the guys with all the 4-year education or maybe even the law degree, with the big debt. They're nowhere near as whole as the guy who's the electrician. I mean, I know
that's
very.
Oh no, that's and that really is, you know, and you know the whole invisible hand thing. I think it's actually waking some people up to I might be better off not go. You know, I guess I'm speaking against my industry here, but I mean there are just certain people that shouldn't go to college. I love my sister. She barely got into college and lasted a couple of semesters and has done very well working. She like manages two kitchens now for a couple of pretty successful breakfast restaurants in Memphis. She didn't really need to go to college to do that. One of my best friends from college flunked out, and he actually is assistant GM of probably the best steakhouse in Memphis. They you know, in those 2 or 3 years where they tried to go to college, those were just wasted years. Yeah. You know, maybe they had fun and all of that, but professionally, they were just wasted years. I think there are a lot of people that end up in professions that they didn't really need to go to college for. You know, there's the running joke that, you know, liberal arts majors are, that's where we get all of our baristas from. But there, unfortunately, is some truth around that.
Well, there is, and yep. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I absolutely take the other side of this, and every time somebody brings it up, but I think everybody, the people you just mentioned, would benefit in their life if they had one of Larissa's classes. And the problem I have with it is the class is $6,000 when it should be one.
You can find a free personal finance class online.
Yeah, but that's, you know what I'm talking about, though. I mean,
I know, but I'm just saying, if you really want to, and I'm not disparaging your class, Larissa, and you know that.
Oh no, no,
but
I know.
I mean, hell, if you want to learn about pretty much anything Larissa or I talk about, we put YouTube videos of our lectures out for free.
I'm just saying that the difference. So, you know, I drop back into my cost accounting mentality. I don't care if you're going to. Actually, I knew a guy. His dad owned a fence company in Detroit. He went to Notre Dame. He wasn't the greatest student, but he was pretty. He's okay. For the $12,000 the Notre Dame education was at the time, I think it was the greatest thing in the world for this guy from age 18 to 21 or whatever the hell you're in school. And I think he benefit tremendously. Now, should he pay $250,000 for that, where maybe he, quote, didn't need it? The question, I think, is one of price. What do you think, Larissa? It's not, you know, I think it has to do with what are we charging for this? I think everybody benefits. I mean, I can't think of any course that I didn't benefit by. Maybe the philosophy course.
Oh.
I got to see it. You know, maybe it might have been a couple, but basically, you learn something in all of them if you paid attention. I think. I mean, it's allowed me in my life to have two or three businesses that were things I was in that basically went under and been able to, you know, make my way into the next phase. I don't think I could have done that if I didn't have an education.
Well, but I'll tell you, if you were, you know, if you were an electrician and the electrician place, you know, and you're working at a firm and they go bust, I'll bet you could find another place to be an electrician very quickly.
I get it, but the entire South Side, I got to ask you a specific question in space. The entire South Side, and I went to the funeral last Saturday with my friend Bill Moriarty. When he was on the air, he talked, you know, for 15 minutes one day, Larissa, about how on the South Side, everybody's dad had some sort of a blue-collar job and did okay, supported a family, did that stuff, you know. And all of a sudden, one company after another left, and those guys were basically shit out of luck. And every single one of those guys said, my kids are never going to do that. They're never going to be beholden to remanufacturing, and all of a sudden remanufacturing says we're going to Mexico and everybody's just sitting there with nothing. All my kids are going to go to college. They're going to have some kind of an education where if that happens to them, they can roll with it. And that's, in my group, that's where that all came from. And I don't know if you can really debate that all that much because all those places are gone. Pullman's gone. Ream's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard to really say they were wrong. But, hey, can we shift gears for a quick second because we are Stacks and Jacks. I never talk about individual trades, Russell or Larissa, but SpaceX, Now, this thing's all over the place, right? It's up a whole bunch from the... Yesterday I looked, and this is from memory. I'm not looking right now because I'm not giving people... It's only got... Options were listed, I think, yesterday. They don't have weeklies. Yep. They just have monthlies. Well, the straddle for tomorrow, yesterday, when I looked, was like $31. The straddle for July is like $63. So it was like double, and that's 4.5 weeks from now. And I'm sitting there going, if I had some money to throw away, buying a couple of the straddles in July and selling the couple this week, if the thing doesn't move $40 by tomorrow night, how am I not a huge winner on that? I mean, the one next month is going to be still 55.
Yeah, and then the one for next month's going to hold up.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm looking at this pricing, and the difference in vol was 120. The ones tomorrow were 240, and the ones in July are like 110 or something.
I think that mispricing was probably a whole lot of retail getting in there and, just buying. I was watching some of the commentary in the first couple of hours of option trading for SpaceX yesterday, and the common theme that you would hear is how freaking expensive those July options or June options were. But that's, everybody's so fixated on the short-term contracts. I'm sure there are a lot of professionals that decided they should take advantage of that.
Well, it's really hard to pay $16 for a time spread, right? Good lord.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but... And the thing with July, I would be more interested in July. This thing's going to get added to the NASDAQ index July 4th week.
I thought that was the intention, and then... Some governing body said no. Now they went back to yes?
They are going to add it to, unless this changed yesterday afternoon. Because I consult with NASDAQ, so I've been talking to them about this. And, they changed the process around a bit. And it should be added. Right now it looks like it'll be added. What I think is funny about it is it looks like it's going to be added the 4th of July week, which means we all have to come to work that week.
Well, I know you're right.
When that happens, they will, it's going to have to be bought by the Qs and a few other index type funds, and that is going to provide a short-term boost to the shares. So I'm not overly surprised that the July straddle is kind of relatively expensive if you think about it right now.
No, it was relatively cheap.
Well, yeah, $60 5-week straddle on a $200 stock.
That's a lot of dough.
That's like a $6 straddle on a $20 stock.
Yeah.
I think people can picture that one a little bit better.
Without a doubt. I know you're right because you're on this more than me, but I seem to recall the original intention was they were going to add them to the indexes real quick. Then somebody somewhere 3 weeks ago said, "No, you can't do that." And all of a sudden, they're back that they're doing it again. So I don't know. I don't know who did somebody in the middle.
I talked to them late last week, and I had a conversation with the person that I deal with there, and we talked about what we think the impact. We're kind of kicking around what we think the impact's going to be on the index and the stock.
Wow,
it's going to be positive for the stock.
Lewis, is it true you've got 10,000 shares? Lewis is still with us? Maybe not. It's 8 o'clock. Maybe she dashed. But I heard people were... the ratio was if you had like a million or two account, you maybe got 15 shares or something. Is that what you've been hearing? Somebody with like 30 million got 500 shares and that kind of thing? Are you there, Russell?
Sorry, I just I was on mute because I thought you were going to talk to her. No, I don't know. I haven't talked to any individuals that got any allocation whatsoever.
I think Carl told us on the air that he got 15 shares.
Oh, did he? That's fantastic.
I think he sold them on the opening print. I think, but he still made $35 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean that's for doing very little.
Yeah, but I
for just being a good guy.
But I think people I've heard of people
SpaceX,
would.
Where is it now? It's
207. It's up $5.
Well, it's between Amazon and Microsoft as far as market cap goes.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, there's. Oh well, we're at the end, and I don't want to start
Carl said market
structure small cap doesn't work anymore, yeah. And this is an example of it.
Carl read the entire prospectus, which only Carl would do, And he claims the only one in there making money is Starlink.
Right now. And Amazon is in the process of buying a Starlink competitor.
Well, you know, the first thing they're going to do...
Globalstar. And that... So Starlink's getting ready. You know, they're one consistent cash cow. They may be having a formidable competitor pretty soon.
Maybe the next war will be fought between two companies.
Oh, I wouldn't be. Do you ever use those little flight thing? Now I'm really off on a tangent. You ever look at those things where they show all the different flights, like on an app?
No.
If you ever look at it late at night, in the southeast, it looks like FedEx and UPS are fighting a war.
Really?
Because all the planes are landing in Kentucky for UPS, and they're all landing in Indiana and Tennessee for FedEx. It all looks like they're fighting each other. It's really kind of common.
Well, FedEx is in Memphis, right?
Or they are, but more packages go through Indianapolis than Memphis now.
Really?
Yeah, it just works better logistically.
Well, Russell, thank you very much. Larissa, if you're still here, thank you. Russell, thank you for last week with those guys. I really enjoyed
it. Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. I'll let you know the next time we're doing one of those.
I hope I didn't bore the hell out of them, but...
No, not at all. You're going to get a shout out on the Kelly website before all said and done.
I absolutely am stunned by the fact that the guy at the Fed said they don't consider money supply anymore.
He said it's not a monetary tool.
How? They said that in the 60s and 70s when Milton Friedman was running around telling them it was, and then finally they said, yeah, it was. Now it's better back than that, and now it's not.
That was what he said.
That's startling. S&P Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 174. You guys have a nice weekend. Andrew, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.